The following contains language of a frank and explicit nature. Discretion is advised.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki.
The two of you were under restraining orders to stay away from each other.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, you're going to get it now.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models, specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs, from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering within a 10-mile radius of Taft Corners.
Taft Corners is in Williston.
Try them for your next wing order, too. 879-1000.
You need to start throwing bombs, baby!
This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Living the dream, baby, living the dream.
All right, Sports Saturday live from the Essex Cinema. Brady Farkas, Jake Kent is here as well. We're filling in for Jeff and Bernie. Soccer games for the Colchester crew, so they are not here, but we are. It is Heroes Day here at the Essex Cinema. Come hang out. The Vermont National Guard is here. They just landed a helicopter as well. There's a blood drive going on. There's food. There's everything you could want to see. Bring the kids out. Bring the family out. You can come. You can sit inside this Vermont National Guard chopper. Jake, we got a lot of stuff going on today. I was very, very nervous as this helicopter just parade, just got hurricane force winds around.
It was pretty wild. There were children fleeing. There were families running for cover. It was actually pretty amazing, yeah.
And now everyone is running to the chopper because they all want to get in. It's kind of like, do you remember as a kid? I don't know how much you traveled as a kid, Jake.
A good amount, yeah.
Do you ever remember being in the airport and they would have, like, miniature planes? And you could go – it was like on the third floor where there was nothing going on.
Yes.
There were miniature planes. You could sit in there. I used to do that all the time.
Yeah, absolute blast. I grew up near an Air Force base, and they would have events like this where you could go and sit in helicopters. You could sit in an F-15. You could get in the bombing planes, the big cargo planes. A lot of fun. Always enjoyed it. A great time to just climb around, sit in the pilot seat, put on the headgear. Yeah, a blast.
Jake, I'm going to ask you just to put your mic up a little bit. This is your first time being on remote.
This is my first remote, yeah.
So what is the experience? Like, what's the difference for you? Because you posted Sports Saturday a lot. What's the difference for you being in studio versus being out here? It's a lot busier out here.
It's a lot busier. There's a lot going on that catches your eye. You kind of got to tune a few things out. Somebody just came up to have a conversation with us, which I think we need like an on-air sign or something.
That is the one that's always the most funny. That is the one that was most funny. So we were at for Rosillo Day last Friday, right? We were out at Red Square, and I'm doing Champlain Valley game night on that Friday, and somebody comes up to me just hammered out of their mind. Like, they're just absolutely blacked out at 6:40, and I'm on the air, and this person's screaming, "Go Red Sox!" And like,
was Arnie there?
No, Arnie wasn't there.
Okay.
But see, now I have my
Arnie. That was your fantastic Arnie impression.
I have my Arnie impression. I also have my Jeff Paul impression.
Okay.
I've never done my Jeff Paul impression.
I want to hear it. I don't know,
I don't know if it's like bad form to do imitation on that guy's show.
It's a good question to be asking, but I say we go for it. I think it's flattery.
The Arnie impression is this. Good afternoon, everybody.
Why do I have one line open?
And then the Jeff Paul impression is, oh, it's Sports Saturday. We're living the dream and taking you with us right here on 101.3 ESPN.
I like that.
Dave Hunter's back in studio. Dave, what did you think of my Jeff Paul impression?
I liked your Arnie impression better, but, you know.
It's good.
Well, that's okay. I've perfected my Arnie impression.
Yeah, and, you know, Jeff Paul was pretty good.
All right, good. I'll take pretty good.
It's hard to tell from here because I can't tell because, usually his baldness is affecting the programming.
Hey, 802-655-6672. You want to get in on the Town Fair Tire text line or on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. We'll take your text all day. We are at the Essex Cinema again, Heroes Day. We're here on the air until noon. I'll be here after as well. This event goes until 2 o'clock. Bring the family out. The helicopters are here. The members of the Vermont National Guard are here as well. And we do thank them and all of our servicemen and women for their service. Our studios are located almost directly next to the Vermont National Guard. So we see these choppers coming in and out all the time from our building, and it is pretty cool to see, and we thank them for our service, or for their service. We do have a big show to get to as well. Coming up today, Austin Danforth of the Burlington Free Press joins us in about 15 minutes, talking about high school football action yesterday, high school football action today. I can't believe the NBA starts in less than a
week.
I just felt like the finals just ended.
It was 7 days ago, I'm pretty sure.
And so we've got the NBA talk coming as well. Kyrie Irving's making no friends, by the way. The info on the Jets and Patriots, we'll get into that. We'll do our fantasy football segment with Jake at 11:40. But first, I owe two things. One, I owe Jake, I owe you an apology.
Okay.
I really enjoy being prepared for the show. I really enjoy planning the show. And I planned the show, and I forgot to send you a show sheet.
Yeah.
So you come up to me at like 9:40. You're like, dude, what are we talking about today? I'm like, the show sheet's planned, and everything's in, and the bullet points are there, and everything's great. And you're like, no, man, you didn't send that to me. I'm like, yeah, I did. And it turns out I didn't. So I apologize that you had absolutely no idea what we're going to talk about today.
I'm ready. Just be ready. All the time.
So the other thing I have to apologize for is that we are at the Essex Cinema. We are outside. It's beautiful weather. It's not cold or anything. I was prepared for a blizzard or for frigid temperatures.
Yeah.
But I did put us under a tree, and the leaves are falling on us
as
we go.
It's seasonal.
So if you like your foliage, you can come out and hang out in our spot here at the Essex Cinema. But we have to start with the Yankees because, Dave, unfortunately, your Yankees are now down 1-0. Down 1-0 in the ALCS. They lose yesterday by a score of 2-1. And really, it didn't feel that close, even because Greg Bird homered in the ninth inning. But other than that,
Yankees
were dominated.
That's
the Yankees
stopper.
Were dominated. Yeah, the Yankees were dominated by Dallas Keuchel. Keuchel at a 1.41 regular season ERA in his career against the Yankees, the lowest of any pitcher against the Yankees that's currently active. So he's had their number. And I have to say, I was surprised. I really thought that what Keuchel had done in the past wouldn't really come into play yesterday, because this Yankee team is so vastly different than the Yankee teams we've seen in the past. This team is very, very right-hand dominant. It's a lot more diversity in their lineup. And I really thought that they were going to be able to I don't know necessarily if I thought they were going to put up five against Keuchel, but have some better at-bats.
Yeah, they didn't have any good at-bats, really. And, yeah, Keuchel came out of last year really struggling and really rediscovered himself. I think that it's interesting because last night felt like the kind of game the Yankees wanted almost. And though it feels a little counterintuitive, I almost thought their best bet was find a low-scoring game, find a way to get a late home run, and get out of there with a win. And they kind of got that almost to happen, and they still lost. So you come away feeling really bad about that.
You know, Dave, it's funny, and I kind of point this at you, because it was a couple of weeks ago, we were at the Champlain Valley Fair back in August, and we had a similar talk about Doug Fister for the Red Sox. And what we saw out of Keuchel is what we talk about with Fister. And Dave, I think you can appreciate this, because you, like me, are a baseball guy. And as fun as it is to hear about velocity, as fun as it is to see 97 and have, you know, a guy like Severino for the Yankees case that could dominate you with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, that's great. But it is nice to see, even though you were on the losing end of it, to see a guy like Keuchel who can win games without dominant stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have pure stuff.
No.
He knows how to pitch left-handed, kind of a kooky delivery, 92 miles an hour, a good sinker, a great changeup, a good slider. I mean, that's a pitching clinic in every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that.
It looked great. Yeah, I mean, it was the movement was wild. He really looked fantastic. I thought he would be good. I thought the Astros were going to have to score a lot more than two runs to get a win, though. So he really did them a big favor starting things out the way he did.
Well, I think the confidence factor that he has against the Yankees and in that ballpark is really what it comes down to. I mean, this team in Houston is so good offensively, and we haven't given their pitching a whole lot of time because
usually we think about them not needing their pitching because they can just beat you 8-0 if they have to, but or 8-7 if they have to. But Keuchel was great. Jose Altuve is amazing.
He's unbelievable.
I mean,
unbelievable.
Three hits again last night. He's 11 for 19 in the playoffs, and for a guy who's 5'6",
yeah,
to be a three hitter, to be hitting nearly 500, or, you know, hitting more than 500 in the playoffs, I mean, this guy is just a freak of nature.
He's like Tony Gwynn reincarnate, and like, and he's doing it in an age in baseball where we think that we're moving away from that guy, right? We think that baseball is becoming Aaron Judge. We think that guys are getting bigger and stronger, and they're going to hit more and more deep balls. And Altuve's out there just raking every day.
Kind of what we just talked about with Keuchel. Altuve is a throwback in that, you know what makes baseball great? And I remember hearing this quote about 6 years ago, and it really resonated with me. In baseball, you don't have to be super big. You don't have to be super fast.
Right.
In some cases, you don't even have to be in super great shape. It all helps. But at any point, you can look out on the field and think, wow, that guy's just like me. And Altuve, 5'5", I mean, he's carrying the banner for all the ordinary guys
right,
out there,
right.
And he's doing extraordinary things. Jose Altuve is an absolute beast, and I mean, he's the MVP of the league. He's led the league in stolen bases three times. He's won three batting titles. This guy is amazing.
Yeah, it's old school baseball, right? Is it Buster who always calls him Tony Gwynn reincarnate? Like, that's a great example for me. Like, it's pretty amazing, like, to think that a guy who, again, there are less balls in play than ever. We're seeing strikeouts at an all-time high. We're seeing home runs at an all-time high. And somehow this guy just keeps putting balls in play. He gets on the bags, and he does the right things. He doesn't make mistakes. You don't see him run into silly outs. He does all the right things just about 100% of the time.
Now you go into game two, and game two is tonight, and you're looking at it, and you think, okay, what are our chances tonight? What are our chances tonight? And Severino's got the ball tonight, if I'm not mistaken. And I got to like my chances there. As long as he comes out and throws strikes, I got to like my chances if I'm the Yankees, because he does have that velocity we talked about. It's great to have guts, guile, and be able to pitch, but when you do have raw stuff, that helps too. I mean, in Severino, 100 miles an hour, devastating slider, decent enough split. If he could come out of the first inning and do well, then I think it sets up well for him. What we saw in the wild card game where he gives up three before he records an out,
not good.
Or gives up three, you know, while only getting one out. You're right, not good, but it plays with your confidence. If he comes out to a fast start, I think this Yankee team can count on a good, reliable outing from him.
What do you think about how do you think the long ball is going to play a role in this series? So Keuchel just does not give up the home run. Obviously, this Yankees team has been built with that in mind and built to really capitalize on the long ball. How does that play a role moving forward?
I think the Yankees need the long ball.
I think they do, too.
The Yankees need the home run because I don't trust that this Yankee team is going to string together 15 hits. They don't
look like it.
They're not a team that's predicated on speed. They are station to station in some cases, in a lot of cases. Outside of Brett Gardner and Ellsbury, if he's playing, and Hicks, there's not a lot of guys that run well on this team. So I think you're going to need grind out an at-bat, draw a walk, get a single, and then play for the three-run homer. I don't think Houston needs the three-run homer. They can get it at any time all up and down their lineup.
Amazing, yeah.
But I don't think that they need it. This team is fast. They'll beat you on the bases. They'll take the extra base on a single. It'll go in first to third. They'll score from first on a double. Altuve runs well. Springer runs well. Correa runs well. Marwin Gonzalez runs all right. Bregman runs well. I mean, up and down this lineup, this has, you know, what we call, they have a long lineup. There's
sure
no easy outs. Everything is hard. Even when you do pitch well, you've jacked up your pitch count, and then you get to your bullpen. But in the Yankees' case, getting to the bullpen is a strength.
It's absolutely a strength. I just wonder, like you said, because of that long lineup and because of the consistency, even that great Yankees bullpen, they are going to have to be – probably have to literally be perfect to pull off a win in this series.
The thing that I want to know about the Yankees bullpen, and I've thought this for the last week, is how does Dellin Betances fit into it? Dellin Betances has become the forgotten man out there.
Yeah, for sure.
And Dave, you would know as well as anybody, because you watch all these games, that Dellin Betances, since about the end of July, has not looked like the Dellin Betances of the last 2 years. He's been erratic with his command. He's been erratic with his mechanics. He's been hit a little bit. His pitch counts have been high. And Joe Girardi's not going to him in the eighth inning anymore. It was very telling to me that in Game 5 of the ALDS, we've heard about they've got guys to pitch the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. and they went with David Robertson for 2 2/3 and Chapman for two,
right.
and they just skipped
that's
over it. Betances completely.
That's right. No, that's exactly what you're saying. That's funny you mentioned that. I was looking at, actually, of all things, DraftKings lineups during the MLB playoffs, and I was looking at bullpen arms because you can actually start them in place of starters. And there's something to be said for with this particular makeup in the playoffs this year. I was so unsure of most every single starter out there. I'm looking at bullpen names, and I couldn't even bring myself to consider using Betances at all. I don't know if he's getting the ball.
He's fourth on that list. Out of Chapman,
amazing.
Robertson,
yeah.
Canely, and Betances, he's fourth. And I don't even know that Chad Green is not ahead of him also.
Well, I think he is, too.
In certain cases. And Green came in and pitched yesterday. I played against Canely in high school growing up. Played against him a bunch of times.
Did you take him deep?
No, but I doubled to the gap twice.
There you go.
So I've got two hits to my record off Canely. and I will say this. When we were 13, right after we went to the big field, you would go from the 46-foot mound to the 60-foot mound, Canely was pitching. He probably threw 75 at 13. He was throwing just straight shed.
Yeah.
He was the first person to ever hit me with a pitch, and I just thought to myself, that feels different than it should. Like, that was the day where I got hit, and the ball – like it felt like it stuck to my arm.
To it, yeah.
The seams are in my shoulder.
Yeah.
There's a bruise there the next day. And I tried to play it off sympathetic for the girls in middle school, and it didn't work. But
no compassion.
Canely was the first person that hit me, and I was like, that feels different. All right, it is Sports Saturday. We are live at Essex Cinema, Heroes Day. Come out, shake hands with the National Guard, get inside the chopper, go into the Humvees. It's a cool scene. There's a lot of people here. We are here as well. Vermont High School Sports, big upset last night. Middlebury over Burlington. You heard it on these airwaves. We'll talk about that and more. Austin Danforth of the Burlington Free Press. He joins us next on 101.3 ESPN.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley.
We are Sports Saturday here.
We are
on 101.3 ESPN.
Jeff Paul, Bernie Siplicki. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
You know, Jake, I just heard a request.
I did too.
That I haven't heard in the whole year that I've been here.
Yeah.
Somebody just came up to me and said, Brady, I love the show. I listen all the time. I listen in the afternoon. But can you talk more New York Knicks?
Yeah, it was amazing.
I would rather talk more Trenton Thunder baseball than talk the New York Knicks.
It's pretty ugly. They got one good player?
They got Porzingis, who I love.
Yeah.
Okay? And Melo was done wrong. I like Melo.
Yeah.
I defend Melo more than most people do. But the Knicks right now, I mean, the Knicks just made a big move to go get Trey Burke, who used to play at Michigan. If that's your big move, then I don't need to talk about you yet.
It's like
they released Trey Burke. They just brought him in. Now he's gone.
This is like on-demand sports talk. Y'all just come walking up to the table. Yeah. You tell us what you want us to talk about.
Yeah, we'll take your requests here live at the Essex Cinema. He said, proud Knicks fan, our friend Andrew here. You want to get on the TikTok Jewelers guest line or the Town Fair Tire text line. We are also going to talk Vermont high school sports. I'm going to do so with the best around. Austin Danforth of the Burlington Free Press joins us on the phone line. Austin, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm okay, guys. I just got my first couple sips of coffee after a late night in the sports room, and good to go.
Now, well, we appreciate you coming on. Now, you've co-hosted this show with Jeff a bunch of times. You've been a guest a bunch of times too. Is it hard for you fluctuating between roles all the time?
No, I roll with the punches. It's it's water off the back, water under the bridge. It's all good.
Hey, Austin, let's ask you about the big upset last night. You heard it on these airwaves. Rich Haskell was on the call. Middlebury tops Burlington 19-14, previously unbeaten Burlington. Is that one you were expecting?
I got to say no, because I, like everybody else in our football forecast, had picked Burlington to beat Middlebury. I thought, Burlington really had it going, but it turned out to be one of those things where Burlington didn't execute. Middlebury hung around and did what it needed to, and they pulled out the win that they really needed and nobody thought they could get. Burlington sounded like they could have been up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter after a great kickoff return, and then a Middlebury turnover seconds later. That was a good one.
Austin, talk to me about Division II. Burton looks like a juggernaut this year. What do you see going forward?
I think I see a lot of Byron Burton beating people. the way they've come around to think that they lost to Burlington 14-9 in week one, and now that they blew out Middlebury last week 36-6, something like that. Their quarterback Jay McCoy is turning into, you know, as a first year quarterback, he's turning into almost a de facto player of the year front runner. Last night he had, I think, 6 touchdowns, ran for 4, threw for 2, and over 400 yards of offense at Milton, who was previously unbeaten, and they went out and beat them 56-6. So, I mean, if he stays healthy, I don't know that they're beatable in their division.
Austin, what are some of the other surprises you've seen here through the regular season, either positively or negatively?
I would say Milton was definitely a surprise to be 6-0 going into their Week 7 matchup. They, like BFA St. Albans, didn't make the playoffs last year. BFA is now 5-2. Their only 2 losses are to the top 2 teams in Division 1. They lost, I think, St. Jay and Hartford by a combined 9 points. So you think about that, and they're right there. Middlebury, I think they're a little bit of a surprise, too. I didn't know what to expect. They've somehow stumbled into the toughest schedule possible. Their 3 losses are St. Jay, Hartford, and Byron Burton. So you think when they're a 4-3 team, and those are the 3 losses, and they just went out and beat an undefeated team, that's pretty darn good from the Tigers. Those are sort of the broad strokes. And then maybe you could throw some love to Mount Mansfield as well. They really haven't gotten a lot of wins or a lot of traction in the last few years, but they just have 2 losses going into today's game against Hartford. I liked them against Colchester a couple weeks ago. Maybe they pull off a stunner. Who knows?
Austin Danforth, Burlington Free Press sports writer, with us here on Sports Saturday live at Essex Cinemas on 101.3 ESPN for Heroes Day. We are here until 12 o'clock, then I'll be here a little bit after. How about a game last night, Austin? Rutland and Essex, 2 teams that are perennially in the hunt, but this year have fallen on real tough times. Weird to see that matchup not mean a whole lot.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Rutland has, I think, the longest playoff streak going in the state in high school football. I think they've made the playoffs like all of the last 15, 16, 17 years, something crazy like that. And that includes up until a few years ago when it was only 4 Division I teams that made the playoffs. They've always been there. Essex, the last couple of years, I mean, they won the championship, I think, in 2009.
Yep.
And since then, they've been sort of like middle of the pack, haven't really been at the top. So those 2 traditional powers not really amounting to much. That's a weird thing. Rutland, though, I mean, they have a couple studs. One of them, their quarterback, Jared McGlory, went out hurt in the first quarter, so they just turned around and started handing it off to Dakota Peters, who had, I think, 295 of their 338 yards of offense on his 31 carries. He scored all 5 of their touchdowns. So that there's some players there for Rutland. I think they're 3-4 now. A couple tough losses to one of them, the Hartford, in a game that they were leading going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, on that note, on an individual level, who are you seeing really as the breakout guys this year? Who has impressed you the most?
I think it's Jay McCoy from Byron Burton.
Yeah.
He's a stud pitcher in the spring. They just won they're coming off the Division I baseball championship. And he's a kid who was a wide receiver. He's been a 4-year starter. He's played linebacker. He's been a key wide receiver for Griff Stahl Cup the last couple of years. But for him to just step behind center and he stumbled through week one a little bit, but now, I mean, they're just rattling off big win after big win. They dismantled Fairhaven, who was looking like a juggernaut at Fairhaven. Then they've turned around and beaten Middlebury with a pretty big dose of Jay McCoy. And then yesterday, Milton got a big dose of Jay McCoy and really was a lot worse for the wear. So I think, by far, for a first-year quarterback to do what he's done. I mean, he was 15-19 passing last night for almost 280 yards. That's
wow.
That sort of precision you don't see a lot.
Yeah, that's what we call his passer efficiency rating is high. Austin, let me ask you about some alumni. You know, I'm going up and down college football rosters locally, looking at Norwich, looking at Castleton, looking at some of the teams in New York, and there's a lot of Vermonters on those rosters. Do you ever pay attention to any of the alumni, especially like an in-state school like Castleton or Norwich?
As much as we can, we do. But when you start thinking about all the kids that play football and then all the kids that play boys soccer and girls soccer and field hockey, and it gets that list piles up pretty quick. And unless they're really, you know, maybe the centerpiece standout on a team, it's a little harder to track. When our focus is as far as college goes, gets sort of shifted to UVM and Division One, we sort of keep in mind what some kids are doing. I know there's girls soccer players, a girl from South Burlington, Annika Nielsen. She was our athlete of the year. She's been starting regularly for Marist. UVM girls soccer has women's soccer has a girl named Ella Bankert who used to play at Mill River down south. Burton sent a girl to University of South Carolina, which is an SEC power and a national power.
Wow.
And she's getting a lot of minutes down there. So it, like when you're trying to keep track of those kids that are really really tearing it up or doing well at the Division I level, we sort of lose sight of those D3 kids, sadly. I know for a fact that Castleton football has been a huge landing spot for Vermont kids, and they've done really well there in the past as well.
Yeah, not to be too off topic, Austin. I know you're a big soccer guy. U.S. men's national team. Are you heartbroken? Have you gotten over it? Where are we at?
I'm not heartbroken because they played so badly.
So bad.
but at the same time, it is a. The heartbreaking part is that, you know, for the broader sports public, USA Soccer doesn't mean anything for at least 4 or 5 more years at this point. There's right. really no big talking point to move the agenda forward. And, I'm going to love the World Cup either way. I'm going to take time off from work probably to, you know, watch games and really soak it in.
Yeah.
I'm already talking with friends about maybe trying to do a trip to Iceland to time it for one of the games when they play in Russia, and then get sort of in the fan
the clap, man.
There.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's such a head scratcher because you the watch them play Tuesday, U.S. men's national team, and they're just sleepwalking, and it's like you guys, if you win, your life is easy. You got to at least scratch out a tie, and you're just sleepwalking through the first half. How does that happen?
Right.
It's not that they don't have the talent. But the execution just wasn't there. The motivation, the urgency wasn't there, and that was tough to swallow because it didn't even look like, you know, the team we're used to seeing.
Awesome. We'll get you out of here on this. You talk about soccer. Let's transition back to high schools for 1 second. Is Jeff Paul's Colchester team, are they going to win a state title or not?
They're in the hunt. I think. Yeah. I mean, they were in the championship game last year. Lost to Burton in overtime on a corner kick goal. They're right there. You got to look at St. Jay is picking up steam in girls soccer, and then South Burlington's right there. South Burlington just knocked off the Jeff's Lakers the other night. But really, the team everyone's gunning for at this point is CVU. They're unbeaten. They're going for I think win number 11 or 12 today. They've given up, I think, 2 goals all season.
Wow.
So the chase is on for the Redhawks, who are pretty deep and pretty loaded.
Well, if Jeff's team has the kind of success we're all hoping for, I'm going to attribute it to talent and not coaching. I just want you to know that.
as I think we should.
That's right. Hey, Austin Danforth, Burlington Free Press, award-winning sports writer on Sports Saturday. Austin, we appreciate the time. A full slate of games on Saturday as well. We know you'll be at all of them, so we appreciate the time.
Thanks, Austin.
Thanks, guys.
That was Austin Danforth. Again, we are live at the Essex Cinema. Heroes Day. Come hang out with us. The show goes till noon. I'll be here much later hanging out as well. People are coming up to us. People are trying to talk to us while we're on the air. I've never felt so popular.
It's very nice.
I have never felt so popular. Bring the family out. The chopper is here. You can hang out in the chopper. Blood drive going on. Food trucks are here. The Humvees are here. We're about to hit the commercial break. I may go in the Humvee and see what it's all about. When we come back, the Patriots, they're taking on the Jets. What are we looking for tomorrow afternoon? We'll be right back, everybody. It's 101.3 ESPN.
Jeff Paul.
that's my quarterback.
Bernie Siplicki. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Sports Saturday, as Jeff would say, living the dream, taking you with us live from the Essex Cinema Heroes Day. Come hang out with us. Jake Ken alongside me, Brady Farkas, and we're in for Jeff and Bernie. Soccer stuff going on for the Colchester girls soccer team, and Jeff is the head coach there, obviously. Thanks to Austin Danforth, who just joined us as well on the phone lines. You want to get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. You know, if there's one thing I thought I knew about the NFL this year, if there's just one thing,
yeah,
I thought it was going to be that the New York Jets were going to be awful. I legitimately thought they could go winless. And even if they didn't go winless, I thought maybe 2-14 at best.
It felt like a really safe bet, and it felt like we didn't know anything else, like you said. We even thought the Browns were going to be much improved.
I thought,
right?
They were going to win five games.
I think the Vegas number was like 3.5 wins, and people were like, oh, hammer that over. People are very excited for them to get 4 or 5 wins. They may not win a game. So we didn't even know what was going to happen with the Browns.
So the Jets are 3-2. The Patriots are 3-2. I didn't think I'd be saying they were going to be tied here in the middle of October. But nonetheless, they come to the table tomorrow. Both teams tied it in the standings in the AFC East. And we'll have the game for you right here on 101.3 ESPN. 1 o'clock's the kickoff. 10 a.m. is the pregame show. I think we've just written this game off as a blowout. Like, I have written him off in my mind. This game is a blowout. I've said 35-16 is my prediction. The spread is 9.5. I think the Pats are going way over it. But the more I think about it, the more I'm starting to convince myself maybe the Jets are in this thing.
I think they might be able to hang around, actually. You know, the Jets are like the third or fourth best team in the league at not giving up yardage on the deep ball. And as we've talked a lot about, Brady is throwing the deep ball at a higher clip than he ever has. So this week, they're going to have to maybe go back to an offense that we're more familiar with the Patriots, a lot more underneath stuff. Maybe they look to really establish the run. Deion Lewis has been fantastic in terms of his efficiency metrics, right? Low volume, so sometimes you see that. But he's been their best runner by far. So maybe this is the week we see some more Deion Lewis. We see some more underneath routes. We see them really capitalize on that, because I don't think the Jets are going to give up the deep ball, especially at the rate the Patriots are throwing it.
Well, I don't know if you heard me yesterday on Champlain Valley game night. I'm not sure if you just time your whole schedule around.
I only stay from 6 to 7
so,
every night to hear you, yeah.
The thing I made the point about yesterday, the thing I'm most fascinated in this matchup, again, because I've already written this in as a Patriots win. Whether it's 35-16, I think, or whether it's 3-0, I've written this in as a
Patriots. I can't imagine they lose, yeah.
I've written this in as a win already. So I'm starting already to think of other things to look for game within the game. The thing I'm most excited to see, and I made this point yesterday, is Jamal Adams, the young safety for the Jets, first-round pick, 6th overall out of LSU. What's the cat and mouse like between him and Tom Brady during the game? Because Jamal Adams has been really good. And you talk about not allowing the deep ball, and he's been really good in the back end of that secondary. Can Brady use some veteran tactics to get him looking, keep him looking in the backfield, and can he get him to go deep? Can Adams stay in and not be duped out by Brady's veteran tactics? The cat and mouse between a first-year stud rookie and a 17-year Hall of Fame, maybe the best ever veteran, that's the thing I want to see more than anything. Because if Adams can hold his own, then the Jets' defense is a lot better. If Brady can exploit his over-aggression, his youth, his inexperience, well, then it's going to be a long day.
It could certainly be a very long day very quickly. I do hope that the Patriots, though this game may, the score may not reflect it and it may very quickly be over, I hope that they use this game to get some things right. Like, I hope they use this as their get-right game. So I want to see them do things we haven't seen them do. I want to see some usage out of the tight ends. Gronk is supposedly back, I think.
Dwayne Allen doesn't have one catch the entire season.
He barely has a target, much less a catch. Like, I want to see them, like, some of the guys we really looked forward to when they got them in the offseason have not been utilized at all.
Well, Burkhead's been hurt, and I'm just devastated about that. I've wanted to see Burkhead a lot.
I like Burkhead a lot. I mean, James White has 800 targets a game right now. I think they got to find a way to get someone targets other than White. So I hope they let Deion Lewis get a few more carries. I'd love to see him get 10, 12 carries at least. I'd love to see a tight end not named Gronk get some usage, because clearly they're going to have to not use Gronk some this year. An argument could be made they should be sitting him in some of these games even if he is healthy. So I want to see them do some of those things. And defensively, Stephon Gilmore, he's got to find a way to do what he does well.
and not blow it everywhere else. He struggled with some of these things that we're seeing now. He struggled with them in Buffalo, too. He was always a guy who was great at the underneath, the quick route. He could jump a route. He could look for a pick. He's great when he gets the ball in his hands, if he does on a return. What he doesn't do well is some of the things they've asked him to do. So hopefully, with 10 days off, they've looked at some of his weaknesses that have been around for many years now, and they've redesigned the way they're going to use him moving forward. And I hope we see some of those changes, even in what might be a blowout.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because every Friday on the huddle, we talk about which Patriot needs to step up most this week. And Stephon Gilmore was my clear choice,
because you
have 10 days, as you said. Communication has been the big problem. It's not even lack of skill set. It's been lack of understanding the multiple defense that the Patriots play. It's also been lack of communication and familiarity. This is a chance to get right. So I think you nailed it on the head, which player needs this game bounce back is most. But also Nate Solder and that offensive line. Because you talk about Brady throwing the deep ball. Well, Brady's been getting hit at a rate he hasn't been hit before in his career.
Yep.
He's already been sacked 16 times this season. That's more than he was sacked all of last year in the 12 games that he played. So a 5-game sack total is bigger than a 12-game sack total from a season ago. He's on pace to get hit more than 100 times this season as well. And I don't even know what technically constitute a quarterback hit.
Right.
Because they always show the graphic.
Yeah.
Hits, hurries. Like, what's the difference?
Right.
Every time I look, Brady's on his back. It's just a question of if he was hammered or if he was pushed, but...
Yeah.
Every time I look, he's on his back.
He's on his back the entire time. And I don't care how much kale you eat at 40 years old, at some point it's going to catch up with you, right? We saw Brett Favre have maybe his best season ever in his 40th year. And when that line couldn't protect him, it fell off a cliff immediately. We're going to see that with Brady.
I mean, this team, the offensive line needs to get right. And I do think it's a byproduct of a couple of things.
It's Deion Lewis, right?
It's a byproduct of a couple of things. This team doesn't have Edelman, right? So because of that, they've gone down the field more than underneath. Longer pass route means longer time for the play to develop, means more time for the quarterback to sit in, which means more chances he can get hit. That's part of it. I also have disagreed with the play calling to some degree.
Me too.
You went out and got all of these running backs. You got Gillislee. You got Burkhead. And though he hasn't played, you have Lewis and you have White. You have four capable running backs that I'm with you. I think could all get 5 to 6 carries a game. And now we're talking about 25, 30 carries over the course of the game. And they're coming out against Carolina 2 weeks ago, and they throw it 10 of the first 11. Like, I understand you have to go and play to your strength, but at some point, you need to have some semblance of balance, because here's what's going to happen. Either this team, with a poor defense, you're going to pass the ball a bunch, you're going to go 3 and out quickly, and your bad defense is going to be on the field, or you're going to move it down the field with these big chunk plays, you're going to score quickly, and your defense ends back up on the field, and time of possession starts getting whacked out of proportion. And for a team that, I'm not saying they need to take the air out of the ball. That's not who they are. But some semblance of balance would be nice, and I hope this is the week we see that.
I think you're absolutely spot on. I think they do need a little more balance. And I think one of the big problems is this is years in the making. I mean, it was 2 years ago where they were winning games with LeGarrette Blount. And, like, their leading rusher was Brady with, like, 19 yards. I mean, they win games, like, rushing for less than 20 yards. And I understand that in the modern-day NFL that there's a much more direct correlation between what we call expected points that stem from a pass to a
running
back.
I love when you talk statty to me. I love it.
I know you do. I understand that there's a better correlation when it's a pass to a running back than a run. Just by nature, they are more successful overall. But at some point, you have to, and then we saw this with the Chip Kelly Philadelphia offense, you have to account for what does it do to your defense and what does it do to the flow of the game overall. And you can throw to your running backs the way they are doing it, but you have to have more balance than what we've seen.
The other thing I wonder about as Patriot fans is just everybody's gotten so greedy. And I'm sitting here saying I think they're going to win 35-16. If they win 17-14, everyone's going to be disappointed.
Of course.
Everybody's going to be, what's wrong? Everybody's going to be, what can we do better?
Yeah.
And that's not the attitude people should have, really.
It really isn't.
Like,
a
win is a win.
That's
you
correct.
Should be happy with a win, but we've gotten so brainwashed into thinking that everything needs to go the way we expected. It needs to exert dominance.
Yeah.
And I thought about this because I'm not a Patriot fan, but
me
I can
either.
Look at it
yeah.
the same way, right? I'm a Seahawks fan, and I remember most of my life up until 15, the Seahawks not being very good. I remember living in Seattle and watching Rick Meyer throw to Brian Blades and watching John Freeze throw to Christian Fourier before he was a Super Bowl champion. Like, I remember those teams that would go 7-9. And I would be just so thrilled when they would go 9-7 and get to the playoffs and lose in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
But now, 5 years, 5 consecutive years with a playoff win, 2 Super Bowl appearances, one win. Like, it's greedy now. Like, when I was 9 years old, I would have killed for the day where they go 10-6, win one playoff game, and that's it.
Right.
But now it's not good enough anymore. And Patriot fans, if they come out and win this game 20-7, I think people are going to look at it and say, oh, the offense didn't do what they should have. Like, it's just too greedy.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. I actually don't, and I'm sort of not. I don't really fall into that trap necessarily. In fact, I do look at process more than result, right? So that tends to be just how I think of things. So whether the Patriots win this game by, they really shouldn't care if they win this game by 40 or by 7. What they should care about is that we see adjustments being made in the areas they have struggled. Defensively, I mean, I know last week they said, well, we were better against Tampa. Well, there were 15 points not on the board that they gave up.
Yeah.
That Tampa blew. I mean, those field goals, the called back touchdown, there were a lot of points being given up still. They moved to that soft zone. Do they come out again after 10 days in a soft zone and play a different defensive scheme? Or have they made adjustments and they go back to what they're good at and we can see that the progress has been made? That's what I want to see.
What I think the defense needs to do, and I think the defense needs to get man-to-man, get physical on the outside. That's what Stephon Gilmore does well.
Classically, okay? Yeah.
Stephon Gilmore is a good bump and run.
That's
let
exactly
me
right.
use my size. Let me get in your face.
At the line, yeah.
And the Rex Ryan tenets in Buffalo that he played under were, look, it's kind of like Remember the Titans. I just want you to go out there and cover 23. Like,
right.
There was no...
It was.
It wasn't much schematics. It was, you're good,
yeah.
Guard this
Be better
guy,
than your guy,
cover
right.
him, and that's it. If you have elite corners, and we think the Pats do in Gilmore and Butler, give yourself a chance to get after the quarterback, play some single coverage on the outside, and dare Josh McCown to beat you down the field, because I don't think he could do it. This week, I think that works against this opponent. Maybe it doesn't work when you're playing a high-level offense. But right now, I think this maybe it doesn't work with Cam, who's got an elite arm.
Sure.
But this week, I think that strategy works. Let Trey Flowers, let the Hightower, let him get after the quarterback, and let those corners on the outside play physical.
If they can't do it this week, then they can't do it at all, right?
Right.
So they're going to do one of two things. They've either decided we can't do it, and they're going to come out in that zone again, and they're going to try and be the zone team, which unless you're playing Cam Newton, who's fantastic against the zone, or a guy like that, you'll be okay. But what it says is we don't believe our guys can do it anymore. If they can't do it this week against this team and Josh McCown, then they're going to have to totally redesign their whole scheme moving forward, because this is your chance. They got to get right this week. They got to play in that man, and they got to be aggressive.
And it just makes me wonder, again, did they make the wrong decision in free agency? I was not okay with the Gilmore signing from the start. It's not okay. But at those numbers, I would have rather seen the money go to Malcolm Butler, the guy that's done it for you. And I know you can't necessarily pay on past performance, but Malcolm Butler's still only 27 years old.
Right.
So I would have rather seen that money go to Butler, or I would have rather seen them keep Logan Ryan at some decent money than go and give it to Gilmore, who I never thought was going to be a great fit. It's Sports Saturday, live from the Essex Cinemas. We are here, Heroes Day. Come hang out. A ton of people here coming in, and a lot of people out here on Saturday. You're running errands in the Essex outlets. We're right next to an ATM, so you want to come get your money and then go in the chopper? You could do that,
straight
too.
Straight cash, yeah.
So, straight cash, homie. The NBA starts next week.
Yeah, it ended last week, so it makes sense.
Yeah, the NBA starts next week. Can you believe this?
No, it's wild.
Are you into the NBA, like, pre-Christmas?
No chance. I like the NBA fine, and I actually very much enjoyed the NBA offseason. It's become interesting. I don't know why it runs from October to August, and then we start again.
The NBA is in a very bad spot as far as week one's concerned, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because the big showdown between the Celtics and Cavs is supposed to be unbelievable. And I'm pumped up for
sure.
it. I don't get into the NBA pre-Christmas. I am excited for opening day for a couple of reasons. I want to see Celtics-Cavs. I want to see Lonzo in the opening. I want to see Fultz and Simmons play together in Philadelphia. I want to see the new-look Rockets. I want to see the Warriors. I want to see a lot of things early. But if LeBron doesn't play because of his ankle,
right.
Like how much – does that half your interest in Celtics-Cavs or all
at
of
least.
It?
At least. Probably just about all of it. I mean, I still want to see Kyrie. I mean, he is like burning bridges. I mean, like a pyromaniac. He is out of control. He's finally playing in a sports city is just a brutal quote. So I do kind of want to see him, whether LeBron plays or not, because I want to see him just go out and go for 60 and see just because that's the attitude he has moving forward. But yeah, it takes my interest from way,
way down if LeBron's out.
Look, I'm interested in Kyrie and the fans. Like, I'm always interested in how the fans will treat somebody coming back, because some people are going to get the hero's welcome. Some people are going to get the boo birds every time I touch the ball. The latter is going to be the case for Kyrie. Interested in that. Also interested in how LeBron would come out and treat Kyrie. Sure. Are they going to embrace at center court before the game? I doubt it. Is LeBron going to give Kyrie a hard foul? Is LeBron going to throw Kyrie to the ground? Is Kyrie going to try to talk trash? Like, those are the things that we want to see out of opening day. And if LeBron doesn't play, none of those things are there.
I hope it's equally or greater than as childish as KD and Russell Westbrook has
become.
Oh,
that was phenomenal, though. That was theater.
It was amazing, and it's been really interesting, and I loved them in the All-Star game. I can't wait to see the All-Star game with LeBron and Kyrie. I can't wait to see that happen on the East Coast version of the KD Russell.
Well, remember, there's the they just changed the format of the All-Star game.
Oh, that's true.
With the
we
captains.
Teams, right?
Will LeBron pick Kyrie?
No chance, right? No chance, right?
Kyrie is a guy that's odd to me right now, because I'm in an interesting position with Kyrie. I have made this known. Kyrie is my favorite player to watch.
Yeah,
like,
I love watching
Kyrie. His handle, his shooting ability, the smoothness, all of it. But you talk about him burning bridges. I'm finding him instantly more and more unlikable. The more I'm around him, number one, he's talking like Socrates, and I just don't understand the way that Kyrie Irving talks.
And the earth is flat.
Yes.
I mean,
I don't understand the way he's talking. Two, he's burning bridges in Cleveland. Three, he just, I don't know. I'm finding him more unlikable. And I loved Isaiah Thomas so much that they're like polar opposites. On one hand, I've got Isaiah Thomas, unheralded, last pick in the draft, had to play 3 years of college, wasn't one and done, traded multiple times, was a bench player, worked his way up. I've got that guy.
Right.
Played after his sister died, played, ironically enough, he played through this injury, and this injury is the thing that caused him getting traded.
Right.
So, on one hand, you've got that guy. And on the other hand, you've got number one pick in the draft, one and done, seems selfish, wants out of Cleveland. Like, I've got selfish versus unselfish. I'm having a hard time loving Kyrie as much as I want to.
We certainly do like an underdog story in the United States. It's sort of what we're all about, and that just stems back to our origins, right? So I can appreciate the underdog story. I like it. But I'm kind of having the opposite thing happen. I'm kind of really starting to like Kyrie more and more. I kind of like this new Kyrie, and I want him to go.
Villain Kyrie.
I kind of like villain Kyrie, bizarro Kyrie.
Did you like villain Kevin Durant? Did you like LeBron?
Villain LeBron, not as much. We don't
villain
have to get
Kobe?
Into the whole classic LeBron. And Kobe's a little bit of a sketchy story, too, so I have to avoid both those topics. But I will say that I like Kyrie in this new stick it to Cleveland for whatever reason.
Maybe like Kevin Durant, villain Kevin Durant, he's got a Twitter account that he uses to defend himself.
Yes, the burn account.
Like Mrs. Goodell.
Also has a burn account, turns out.
Yes, Roger Goodell has a Twitter account, like a Twitter defender, and it turned out to be his wife. Hey,
that's still my wife, dude.
Sports Saturday live from Essex Cinema. We'll be right back after the top of the hour. We'll get into the Yankees and Red Sox, all that and more next on 101.3 ESPN.
This is my favorite show.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Oh, I love it. Don't stop. Okay, stop. We got plenty.
Dave Hunter, I have to say, you have absolutely dominated the intros to our segments. You've got cool bumper music. How long did it take you to put together this greatness?
To put together what? I'm sorry?
How long did it take you to put together this greatness that is your intros and your bumper music? I mean, this is phenomenal.
Yeah, so good.
I'm just winging it.
Making it up
classic.
As he goes.
This whole thing? Right.
We are here, Sports Saturday, live at the Essex Cinema. We're outside, so come on, say hi to us. But more importantly, say hi to the people at the Vermont National Guard. They are here as well. It is Heroes Day. They landed the big helicopter in the parking lot. The families are here. The kids are out. You can come take a seat in the Humvee. You could be out in the chopper. A lot of great things going on. There's a blood drive going on. There's food trucks here as well. You're doing your shopping, your errands here in the Essex outlets. Come on over to the cinema parking lot, because this is a fun time. And It is Heroes Day, and it feels that way. And we're lucky enough to have a lot of people in this state who are associated with the military, and the Vermont National Guard is a presence right next to our station, and we see them every day. I go into Simon's Deli, and they're always there, and I thank them for their service, and this is a chance for you to come and do the same.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. There's been a lot of drama surrounding the intersection of politics and sports lately, but I'd like to think that whatever your leaning might be, whatever your opinions might be, what we can appreciate is that there's individual sacrifice, whether you agree with the big picture or not, and that is worth thanking them for, and that is worth giving them a little bit of respect and honor.
Well, everybody has said that the military is people they're supportive of. No matter what, if people are sitting for the anthem or kneeling for the anthem, no matter what they're doing for the anthem and for politics, right, left, red, blue, whatever, the military is something that everybody agrees on. Our debt of gratitude is out to everyone here at the Vermont National Guard and everyone everywhere who serves and has served. Continuing on in hour number two, look, I saw this topic yesterday, and it's something I've thought about before. I haven't brought it to the show, and I think it's time now. The Red Sox fired John Farrell this week. The Red Sox made the playoffs for the second straight year. They missed the ALCS for the second straight year, getting beaten in the first round. The Yankees kind of came from, I won't call it nowhere, but they came from out of the playoff picture, and they're in the ALCS.
Yeah.
As you look forward as a baseball fan, next 5 years, next 10 years, who's in the better spot, Yankees or Red Sox?
It's a great question to be asking, and it's certainly one I think about, because it feels a little bit like this core of young Red Sox stars and this young talent that we've heard about for so long has now been around for a couple years. And I think largely people feel like they've underachieved a little bit, that they don't come up big in the spots where it matters most, early exits in the playoffs. And those guys who were inexpensive and who were young guys aren't quite as young, and contracts are coming up. And it's about to be a real big problem in just another year or two.
Well, you've still got 2 years of Xander Bogaerts. You've still got three, I think, of Mookie Betts. Jackie Bradley still got 2 to 3. Benintendi's got 5. So, I mean, you do have that. But there is only one answer to this question. The Yankees are in 10 times a better spot moving forward for the next decade than the Red Sox. And I know that doesn't make Red Sox fans happy, and the Yankee fans who are listening are probably, yeah. But it's so obvious. Part of the reason you just said is that the Red Sox young players are here and they've been here. There are going to be contract issues, and you can't keep everyone. I have to imagine Mookie Betts you're going to sign, you're going to want long-term, and that's probably going to be a $300 million deal.
You would
have
think.
To imagine that when that comes in 2 to 3 years.
You would think so.
I'd like to think you want Xander Bogaerts also.
Sure.
Benintendi you don't have to worry about just yet. But you're going to have Chris Sale coming up with a big contract potentially. Can you keep everybody? And if you keep everybody, are you going to run into a situation where you are like the Yankees were prior to this rebuild,
right,
where you're now old, aging, and everyone's overpaid?
Right.
Are you going to end up with what Dustin Pedroia looks like out of 3 to 4 other players as well? And you've got David Price.
Mm-hmm.
So the contract issue, excuse me, Yankees, the Red Sox don't have exciting prospects anymore.
Right, no.
Okay, they've traded all of them away. Moncada was the guy we were excited
about.
Gave
up on,
They got rid of him.
Yeah.
They traded guys for, in the Thornburg deal that they got rid of Shaw and some others. They have traded away a lot of prospects. The Yankees, not only do they have Sanchez, Judge, Clint Frazier, who we've seen, they've got Dylan Tate and Justice Sheffield and Gleyber Torres. They've got all of these guys that they've acquired. Like, there's more talent coming for the Yankees. Not only do they have the current young talent, there's more talent coming.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Pedroia is the perfect example, because when we saw this last group of Red Sox greats go through and win some World Series, he's one of the guys. He was the young guy, right? He was the guy, I think, out of Arizona who came in and was dirt cheap, right, and productive. And Jacoby Ellsbury was dirt cheap and productive. And they were able to have that young talent with young talent behind them and still put together a group that was winning World Series. Now those guys are long gone. Pedroia is old and hurt, unfortunately. And while we love him as Red Sox fans, his time is mostly past, and Xander Bogaerts will just become another Dustin Pedroia if you're not careful, because they're not ready yet. I don't even know that next year they're going to be quite ready. They've really got some questions to answer. So if you're a couple years away still,
Bogarts looks a lot different with a massive contract 3 years from now.
The Yankees are in a position, I thought all along, with the moves they made last year at the deadline, I thought they were in a position to win for a decade. The Red Sox, when they went out and traded a lot of their future for Sale and Thornburg, they became instantly in a win-now position.
Absolutely.
And with no farm system, with no prospects, not only to come up and play yourself, but they don't have excess prospects to go out and trade, right? And that's when I say the key to the Red Sox's redevelopment of the farm system, people get mad at me and they say, well, prospects just get GMs fired, and why hold on to the kids if they're not going to play well? Like, you don't know what they're going to become.
Sure.
All of that is true. But you either hit on your prospects like you have with Betts and Benintendi.
Sure.
Or you have excess prospects where those three come up and another three just like them get traded, a la what the Astros did for Justin Verlander.
Absolutely, right.
The Astros traded some prospects for Verlander. The right. Yankees were able to trade prospects for Robertson
yep.
and Canley and not have to give up Torres and Sheffield and those guys because they had so many of them that you can afford to get rid of three or four of them and you still have a loaded farm. So the Red Sox, outside of Devers now, they're done as far as prospects go.
No, that's completely true. And where are we at in terms of pitching with these two teams? We're entering an interesting time in Major League Baseball where we're seeing an emphasis put on the home run and on shut them down, sit them down, bullpens. And I don't see either of these two teams with great going forward starting pitching, but do they even care?
The Yankees need starting pitching, no doubt about it. In the short term, the Red Sox were still okay starting pitching-wise. I'll take the Red Sox starting pitching for the next 3 years with David Price, if he's healthy, with
okay.
Chris Sale, with I hope that – I don't even need Porcell. I don't need Porcell to be 22-4.
He's
but
not
if he
be.
Goes 15-12,
yeah.
then I'll be happy.
Okay.
If Pomeranz can give you some of what he – you know, expect some regression, but if he can give
he
you –
yeah.
He was 17-6 or whatever this year. If he can go – 15-9. I'll take that over
sure.
what the Yankees have. Outside of Severino, I'm not confident really in what the Yankees
no.
have. But the other thing to think about the Yankees is this. Well, the Red Sox salaries are going to balloon soon. Betts, Benintendi, or Betts, Bogarts, maybe Bradley if
Bradley,
you keep
if
them.
You want him, yeah.
Those contracts, Sale, those contracts are going to balloon.
Huge, yeah.
The Yankees contracts are dwindling and dwindling and dwindling. Their committed money is about to be off the books. CC Sabathia's massive contract from the last 7 years, done after this
Thank
season.
Thank goodness, right?
Michael Pineda, now again, we don't know what's going to happen with him, free agent at the end of the year, but he's been so hurt that if you do want to keep him, maybe you get him on the cheap.
You get him on the cheap, absolutely.
Tanaka now has pitched so well
right.
over the last month and a half of the season that maybe he
does. He pitches way out of town, probably.
He opts out of his contract,
yeah.
and if you don't want Tanaka, then you've lost that money.
Yep.
Now, maybe you want him, and he's going to get a bigger deal. But
sure.
if you don't want him, you've lost that money as well. Brian McCann, Mark Teixeira, A-Rod. Like, those things are starting to come off the
right.
books.
After a decade of brutal. Yep.
The more those come off the books, look at what's coming down the free agent market.
Yeah.
Eric Hosmer, J.D. Martinez this year. Do you want either of those guys? How about Bryce Harper and Manny Machado in 2018? Do you want those guys? So you have money to play with. You have so much money now coming off the books and so much money to play with in the future. The Red Sox money in the future is going to go to their own guys. They're
right.
going to go. You're not going to let Mookie Betts walk out the door.
You can't, yeah.
But imagine a Yankee outfield, Aaron Judge, Clint Frazier, and Bryce Harper.
Right.
All of that's potential.
Stanton.
I mean, that is where the Yankees unequivocally have the best are the better situation going forward.
There's a maniacal laugh from Dave. I think I just heard trickle in over the airwaves there. But yeah, Harper in that group would be crazy. Do you think either team's interested in Stanton, or is it J.D. Martinez the hot ticket item?
I think the Red Sox will be interested in Stanton, and we're going to get to that in 10 minutes. And I don't think they should be.
Yeah,
we're going to get to that in 10 minutes, though. I'll stay on the Red Sox in this way. Now you're a Sox fan.
Yeah.
What did you think of the firing of Farrell?
I'm not a big fire the manager guy in general because
you're a nice guy and don't like people losing their jobs, or because you don't value the managerial position.
I think we do a poor job evaluating managerial talent that's not currently in the building. So what is your alternative? I'm not opposed to getting rid of a guy, but I want a clear understanding of what's available as an alternative and what's the plan to get him in place. I don't know that we have Alex Cora as the best option available. I don't know how excited I am to replace a guy who's been there, who I know can win a World Series, with an unknown, with this group in particular.
Productivity-wise, he did not deserve to be fired. 5 years, World Series, two division trips, championships, right. 93 win seasons back to back. And you know what? Again, I say the same thing about Joe Girardi. You can miss me with the business of he ran the bullpen poorly on May 10th. He should have pinch hit on July 7th.
That's like, right.
You can.
There's 162 games. Like, let's get over
you
it.
You
right?
can. Like, I don't need to hear that.
No, me either.
I know that this guy overcame injuries and overcame excess drama to go 24 games over 500 consecutive years.
That's right.
There's some good managerial skill in there.
Right.
Productivity-wise, he did not deserve to be fired. If he doesn't connect with the lot with the clubhouse anymore, then fine. Maybe you can sell me on it. But the grass is not always greener.
No.
Look at these organizations that have fired head coaches because they needed, quote, a new voice.
Right.
And look at where they've gone. Don't you think that the Giant fans would love to have what Tom Coughlin could be, was instead of 0-5 right now?
That is correct.
Don't you remember that the San Diego Chargers went 14-2 with Marty Schottenheimer?
Get him out of town.
And then fired him. And, oh, by the way, the San Diego Chargers have one win this season. And they have been
right.
average to below average for a decade.
It's Andy Reid, right? It's right. another classic example.
So and then you throw in Terry Francona in Boston. Get rid of him. Bobby Valentine, 24 games under 500.
Right.
The grass is not always
That's
greener.
Exactly right.
It's not as simple as, oh, let's just replace the manager.
That's right.
Betts, Bradley, Bogarts, Pedroia, all hitting under 250 the last two postseasons. Three of those four are hitting under 200 in that time. Mookie Betts doesn't have an RBI in the playoffs in the last two seasons. There are other factors here as well. And by the way, that clubhouse is poisonous. That clubhouse this year was poisonous. And I don't know. I would need to know, is that a result of Farrell's lack of leadership?
It's a great question.
Or is it a result of the players themselves being toxic? Because if it's the latter, then John Farrell just fell on the sword for your poor attitudes.
That's a great question. I guess we'll never really know exactly what that locker room was like. And if that is the root of the problem, I am more open to moving on, to have a new guy in charge, a new head in place to bring some stability and some authority to that situation. I don't know if it was that bad. I don't know if it was bad enough for that to happen. I don't know if it had something to do with the price situation and they felt like he did not handle that correctly.
Well, he didn't.
And he may not have. You know, but at the end of the day, I get that. I understand that there's an element of managing personalities and there's an element of public appearance that's important. But at the end of the day, it's productivity, right? I mean, he won games. He brought them to World Series. He brought them to playoff trips. That's what matters to me. You can be the greatest personality manager in the world, but if you're still not winning games, no one's going to care.
And Dave just texted me and goes, what about, well, Terry Collins is available, and Ron Gardenhire is available, and Tony La Russa and Jim Leland are in theory available.
Sure.
Here's what I think. If you fired your manager because you need a fresh voice, then I need a fresh approach.
Right.
And
agreed.
If I just fire John Farrell, who's mid-50s, been around the game right. forever.
And bring in Leland. Right.
And I bring in a guy who's older than him, a guy who thinks the same. I have to think that they think the same way about baseball, right? Like, how sabermetrically inclined is Jim Leland, Tony La Russa, Ron Gardenhire, any of these guys? If I just fired a stodgy baseball guy with no personality, I don't need a stodgy baseball guy with no personality.
That's exactly right.
I need a fresh, younger voice. That's why Alex Cora is my choice.
Yeah.
Alex Cora, look, he was a former player. He checks that box. He's been on a big league staff before with Houston this year. I know it's 1 year, but he's done that. He has managed Puerto Rico in the World Baseball Classic. And by the way, managed them to a final of the World Baseball Classic. Can you talk about managing egos? I mean,
that's a spot for it.
Yeah. Yadier Molina.
Unbelievable. I mean, yeah.
Francisco Lindor, Javi Baez, those guys are major league players. He's managed major league players before, and he did it for 2 weeks on something that means a lot to that country.
It does, absolutely.
He's also been in Houston where they are new wave thinking, sabermetrically inclined.
Absolutely.
He doesn't need to have a pocket protector, but he needs to have some new way of thinking. He also was on Baseball Tonight as a broadcaster. So I think he can effectively communicate with the media, which I think Farrell lacked, and I think he can effectively communicate with his players. The only thing that I wonder is, will the veterans buy into a guy who's a new, fresh voice? Or because Chris Sale, David Price, and Dustin Pedroia don't have a whole lot of personality, will they buy in and be receptive to a young, fresh approach?
I don't know the answer.
The Red Sox
don't strike me as let's buy into this new thing type guys.
The Red Sox need the guy I just said. But I don't know that Dave Dombrowski, who is not sabermetrically inclined,
right.
and is old school, I don't know that he'll give them that. And I don't know that the team would buy into this. So that's why I think firing Farrell might have just been a poor decision in general, because productivity-wise, he was good. And then if what you need is in box A, but you're not going to be receptive to box A, then don't give me
then
box B, which is the exact same thing.
Right. I completely, back to my original point, that's exactly where I'm at. If there's not a clear and concise alternative and a plan to put it in place, I'll pass. Just let me stay where I'm at, and we'll win 92 games next year, and we'll mismanage a couple situations, but I'm going to be okay.
Are you sad you fired? You let Torrey Lovello walk last year?
No, I'm okay.
Because Torrey Lovello was the guy you just described.
That's true.
He was the guy who was in-house. He was your bench coach. Now he's in Arizona. And, oh, by the way, they went from
great.
Nearly worst to first. So, Sports Saturday live at the Essex Cinema. Sports Saturday, we are here. Brady Farkas, Jake Kent. When we come back, should those Red Sox make a move for Giancarlo Stanton? All that and more, 101.3 ESPN.
Fired!
Already.
This is Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Bernie Siplicki.
I'm just very, very sorry that it's come to this. I mean, it's just terrible.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Sports Saturday here on 101.3 ESPN. The show goes till noon. I'll be here till 12:30. Heroes Day goes until 2 o'clock. You know, we just had a listener come on, Brian, and he was telling me, he goes, Brady, I really love your guest list that you have on this show and on The Huddle. And I started thinking about, Jake, I think everybody knows, right? Like, I take a lot of pride in trying to get good guests. And we try to up the names, and we try to up the content, and Field Yates, Stefania Bell joining us weekly, and Zach Cox of Nesson, and Tom Caron, and Buster Olney. And we had on Kobe Altman, the GM of the Cavs, former players, current players. I think, you know, that's kind of the thing that I take, like, the most pride in, is just having good guests. And
sure.
It's very, very hard to get guests. And I think anybody who, you know, Dave would know, Jeff would know when he's here. I think anybody who's ever booked guests knows just how hard it can be and just how much of a struggle it can be, because you're trying to negotiate your schedule with their schedule and this day and that day and everything. Then I started thinking about, man, we've had some really good guests. I don't even know if I should be saying this, but there are some other guests that we've reached out to that it just hasn't worked out yet, but it might work out in the future. And I texted Bill Walton the other day, and I just started thinking to myself, does Bill Walton text?
It's a good
Do you
question.
Think Bill Walton texts?
Like, maybe so. It's really prevalent. I mean, my grandparents text.
Like, should I call Bill Walton out? It's like, say, hey, Bill, Brady from ESPN in Burlington, love to have you on. What's your favorite Grateful Dead song? Like, what? Like, is that how I should do it?
I think using something unique would be a good approach.
Should I do my Bill Walton impression
for him?
You have
a Bill Walton one?
Well, pretty much. You just talk like this. mean,
you could leave him a message doing that and see if it helps you.
Hi, Bill
this
Brady.
This is Bill
here.
Walton. I mean, it's pretty...
Bill, big fan of your son's work with the Lakers. Like, right. how should I try to get Bill Walton on?
I would say not that.
So I should... So was the text good enough, or should I go for more? Like, should I do more?
I would say I would do a voicemail, not doing an impression for
and
Bill.
And then how many days, like, it's like kind of like a girl, right?
Yeah.
Like, I just texted Bill Walton yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Do I need to leave him 3 days, 2 months? Like, how much time do I need to allot in between my contacting of Bill Walton?
Yeah, if it's alternate forms of communication, I'm actually okay with shrinking the delay in between.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't want to...
Friday, Monday, one text, one call, that's totally fine.
I don't want to come on too strong.
No, I think you're okay. If you texted Friday, a call Monday, totally appropriate.
Because I don't want to come on too strong. And, you know, there's other stories like that. I wonder if this guy texts or that guy texts. It's really annoying to me when they don't have an iPhone, because when on the iPhone, it can say that it was delivered.
Right.
But with the Android phones, where it just shows up as the green box.
Maybe they got it.
I don't know if they got it. I don't know if they didn't get it. I don't know when they read it. I don't know when it's appropriate to contact them again.
Right.
Largely, we have had very, very good success. For the most part, if I've had their contact info, they all get back to me.
Sure.
It's all great. Bill Walton hasn't gotten back to me yet.
I think he'll appreciate a call, though.
I'm just wondering.
He's a little old school, probably.
I'm just wondering if I should. Maybe Bill Walton has, like, a rep. Maybe Bill Walton's, like, mad that I have his actual phone number.
Maybe. Could be.
But I do have Bill Walton's phone number.
That's
my Arnie impression of, like, name-dropping people.
That was a good one. You know, very subtle. Yeah.
Well, you know, Bill Walton. names in my contact list.
Call him as himself. He won't even know. Like, and just reminding myself to call Brady.
It's another another planetary celluloid version of Bill Walton.
Right.
So, it is Sports Saturday Live at the Essex Cinema. We were just talking about the Red Sox and a little bit about their future. And let's go with the big question of their offseason. I think there's two major acquisitions potentially at play for Boston. Maybe three. One, you could sign Eric Hosmer long-term, solidify first base. Also could play great defense as a Gold Glove caliber first baseman. Two, you could try to make a run like the other 29 teams will at Shohei Ohtani, the Japanese superstar. Shohei Ohtani, and Jake, I don't know how much you followed him.
Yeah, a little bit.
But Shohei Ohtani is the Japanese Babe Ruth. He's 23 years old, 100 miles an hour on the mound, 30-plus power, 30-plus home run power from the plate as well. And teams are open to him doing both. Like, legitimately, if it's an American League team, they're open to him being a starting pitcher and hitting as a designated hitter. And teams are open to that.
Wow.
Whatever it takes to get him, they're willing to do. And because of the international posting rules, it's way different than the past.
Right.
It used to be a Japanese player would get posted. Basically, teams would bid
right,
for
yeah.
the right to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So the Red Sox paid, you know, $50 million Dice just
K.
to talk to Dice
right.
K, and then gave Dice K a contract.
Right.
Well, now the playing field has been severely leveled to where, like, he can only make X amount of dollars if he comes out before age 25.
Right, right.
So Ohtani's going to be a play for everybody. It's just going to be a question of really where does he want to play, because he's going to have options everywhere.
Seattle?
I would say National League is probably out because he's not going to be able to DH also. So I would take the National League out of it because there is no DH.
But he'll hit.
Very difficult to be a starting pitcher, throw 100 pitches, and then go play right field or something.
Enough. Fair enough.
And pitch again 2 days later. Too much wear on the arm, and at the money he's going to get, it's still going to be too much to do that.
Fair enough.
So I'll say the National League is out of it in terms of being a dual threat player. If they want him to just pitch or just hit, well, then everybody's in play.
Is he okay with not doing both, or is he really pushing for
both?
He
wants to do both.
Okay.
So if you talk about American League teams, you go to the usual suspects. Well, it's not going to just be Yankees and Red Sox because the money is going to be equal. So it's going to be, does he want to play in the big market? Like, does he want that?
Mm-hmm.
He could go to Seattle where they've had a history of playing well with Japanese players.
Right.
And there's a big Asian influence and culture in Seattle.
This is what I wonder. Yep.
So that's good as well, from Ichiro to Kazuhiro Sasaki to Kenji Jojima. Like, it doesn't matter. Seattle has turned out successful Japanese players. Maybe you look at that. But then any number, I mean, Minnesota, Detroit, like, there's all, everybody's going to be a play. So I think that's move number two that they can make.
Sure.
Move number three is you're going to go and try to trade for Giancarlo Stanton. And that's what people are talking about. Derek Jeter's come into Miami, and he's not cleaning a house, but he's certainly going to make the organization his. And does he want to have a $300 million contract for Stanton for another 7 years, or does he want to acquire prospects, acquire younger major league talent that's under team control and cheaper, whatever. So if you're the Red Sox, you finished last in the majors in homers, you didn't hit a grand slam the entire season, power is clearly the thing that you're lacking the most from an offensive side of things, do you try to make a move for Giancarlo Stanton? Can you and would you?
I not at $300 million. Not
well, that money's
me.
Already there. I mean, now remember, it's going to be prorated, so you're looking at 7 years and whatever's left on that deal. And maybe the Marlins take some of it, but they're not taking all of it, obviously.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you get the number close to $200 million, if you get to 220, 240, it starts to sound more reasonable.
Well, let's see. 10 years at 300, $30 million a year.
Right.
Now, he's already played, I believe, 3 years under that deal. So that only lumps off $90 million.
Right.
So right there, it's talking 7 years, 210.
I'm more willing to entertain it at 210 based on what they have right now and what they have for the next 2 to 3 years, like we talked about. Having a huge bat in that lineup for the next 3 years in particular would be great for them. It doesn't do you any favors, like we already talked about. They're about to have serious cash problems in 3 years anyway. So I don't even know how they make it work. They're going to pay huge luxury tax 3 years from now if they bring him in.
I don't want to make this move because this move is going to require you trade either Mookie Betts or Andrew Benintendi. It's going to require one of those things.
And I don't give up either for him.
And it's probably Benintendi because if I'm the Marlins, sure, I'd want Betts, but knowing he's going to be a free agent quicker, is Betts going to sign?
No, it's got to be Benintendi, right?
You've got it, because you're going to get 5 years left of team control for Benintendi, and maybe you can sign him long term, but you don't have to worry about that yet. So I don't think this move happens for a few reasons. One, I don't think the Red Sox have minor league prospects to go make this deal. We just talked about the Red Sox not having excess prospects to go make a big deal.
Right.
They don't have that. There's nobody in the system who Derek Jeter could point to and say, I want this guy, that guy, and that guy. There are no of those guys.
Right.
Jason Groom, the 19-year-old lefty, the former first-round pick who just missed the end of the year with an elbow injury, he's your really lone blue-chip prospect down there, and he's got attitude and injury concerns. So I wouldn't want him. Then you just brought up Devers, and you need Devers because you've seen what happened with Sandoval. So Devers is now going to be your everyday third baseman next year.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So if I'm Derek Jeter, I'm saying, okay, what do you have to give me that I want? You have two great young outfielders. You have Benintendi, and you have Betts. I want one of those for sure, probably Benintendi because he's younger and under team control and going to be cheaper. But then who else? I don't even know that the Red Sox have the pieces to make this deal if they wanted to.
They may not. I think financially you can justify it. I think I can get there in my mind around the money. The player side of it is much more difficult. I can't imagine giving up Benintendi for him long term, despite his great power numbers. I don't know who will. I'm not even sure the Yankees will. Like I don't know what the
Yankees don't need to.
That's the thing.
Judge,
right?
Frazier, and I'm going all in on Harper in 2 years. I'm going all in on Harper. If I'm going to pay massive money, I'll pay
Harper. Right?
I'll pay Harper $400 million.
I think everyone feels that way.
If I need to.
It's fascinating, yeah. I don't know that anybody – I don't know who's going to be that excited to bring in Stanton. I can't think of a team that's close to winning a World Series who would be willing to suck up the money just to get it done.
Well, the Dodgers are another obvious choice, right? But
they've been the answer.
And the Dodgers have prospects, right? The Dodgers have young players.
True.
Could they send Puig to Miami? And Puig, culturally, you know, in an area with a high Cuban population,
makes
maybe Puig would fit in well in Miami. I don't want to stereotype it, but
no,
Miami with
though.
A high Cuban population.
Yeah.
Puig has had good, you know, has a decent sized contract, although he's been now there like 4 years now, so his contract isn't as big as it once was.
Sure.
So maybe you send Puig and that just clears up an outfielder spot. Maybe you send prospects. If I'm Miami, I'd ask for Cody Bellinger, which I don't think they'd get, but like those are the guys I would ask for.
Yeah, I mean, if the Dodgers,
I'd ask for Arias, the 20-year-old pitcher who missed most of the season.
Sure.
I'd ask for him. Like the Dodgers have the pieces to do this. Washington has some pieces. Do they want to trade in the division? All that, I don't know. But
yeah,
if I'm the Red Sox, number one, I don't want to do it because I want my young outfielders.
Agreed.
Number two, I don't think I can do it because I don't think I have the pieces to facilitate. So I don't see this deal happening. I think they're more likely to do everything I don't want them to do. I think they're more likely to hire a manager that's old school that I don't want. I think they're more likely to take an old school approach and go sign an Eric Hosmer and give another guy who's 28 or 29 a 7-year deal, and he's going to hit 247, and he might hit 28 home runs, and they'll address the power, but they're going to struggle in a lot of the other necessary areas that they need.
I hope that's not what they do. But I understand the need for power in this lineup. They need it. To me, that guy is like everybody else is going to want. JD Martinez is where I would look.
But see, the thing about JD Martinez is this also. You have three outfielders. You have the outfield on lock. Benintendi, Betts, Bradley. So he's not playing the outfield over any of those guys. So then you look at DH.
That's what's going to happen.
Well, I've got Hanley for 2 more years.
He ain't getting it done, right?
I've got Hanley for 2 more years at massive money.
You move no him
one's
to first,
gonna
right?
take
you try
him.
To move him back to first.
You move him to first if his shoulder will comply. You couldn't play
enough.
Defense there all year. So I just don't know where it happens. Another reason why I think the Yankees are in a better position than the Red Sox moving forward. Sports Saturday live here from the Essex Cinema. Heroes Day, people hanging out. Commercial break. I'm going to go in the Humvee, the chopper. The movie theater is open now, so come out. Get your shopping done at the Essex Outlets. We have the your Saturday matinee specials. Any good movies you want to see?
You know, there's a couple that I want to see. Somebody just left with like 2 garbage bags full of popcorn. And I am in for that. You can still see him getting in the car right there. I mean, garbage bags.
Must be having a birthday party.
Something. I'll take it.
Birthday party, clown.
Or just a movie marathon weekend.
I'd buy the Orville Redenbachers at that rate.
You can watch every season of Seinfeld and eat that popcorn.
What's your favorite Seinfeld episode? Because you're a Seinfeld buff.
right?
No, it's a little before my time.
No,
I'm okay
before
with
your time. I'm younger than you.
it's a little abnormal for you, I think. I've always struggled with your timeline as it relates to Seinfeld. Maybe we can break that down.
TBS, it was on every day like
syndication.
Seven times.
You watched it in syndication. Okay.
Oh, yeah, but I watched it live at the end.
Right.
But
that's why I was confused.
Seinfeld,
how you got into it.
Seinfeld is the GOAT. The power rankings go Seinfeld, Tom Brady. No soup for you. All right, we're live, everybody. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of U.S. men's soccer, Patriots and Jets. We'll get into all that and more. Coming up next, 101.3 ESPN.
Jeff Paul, Bernie Siplicki.
Call me daddy.
This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
Sports Saturday live from the Essex Cinema right here. Saturday morning, Saturday mid-afternoon. Come get your lunch. Come out to Heroes Day. Go take in a movie as well. Jake, it's time for your fantasy football segment.
All right.
So you are super fantasy football inclined. Like, how many different, like I'm just amazed at the level of stuff that you know. Like, look, every week, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, they're awesome. They do it for a living.
Yeah.
This is your side gig, and you are like you're like on par.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you saying that. I do spend time on it in the football season. If you ask my wife, she would tell you that. I
too much time, if you ask her.
That is factual.
By the way, you know, has your daughter start, you know,
her team is 4-0. No, she hasn't drafted a team yet. Yeah, I've been writing for a variety of websites, fantasy football, for about 5 years now. I've been playing for about 15 years, so I've been into it for a while. I play in this year. I toned it down this year. I play in 6 leagues this year. So I play in one fun, all friends from the area league. We do a live draft in person. We get together.
Are all these for money, or some of them for pride? Mix of
none
both.
None of the what we call expert leagues are for money, because industry requires you don't play for money for a lot of these guys. So I play with guys from Jamie Eisenberg from CBS Sports is in most of my leagues. Play with a bunch of the guys from ESPN, from all the different roto sites. Guys from 4for4 and for Number Fire, if you're really into Atlantic analytics, those are the sites that I write for. So play with those guys, but none of those leagues are for money. They're just for pride. It's like you just got to get it done. So I got an invite to one of those leagues years ago. That is the league I started 0-6 my first time in. Jamie, 0-6. I lost my 6th game to Jamie Eisenberg of CBS Sports. Thought, I can't do this. I'm getting housed. I won 7 straight. I made the playoffs. I won the championship.
Oh, man.
And so I started getting invites to other leagues. So that's kind of the roots of the story and how I started playing on an expert level. And, so it's fun.
So this week, we're talking – look, obviously it's Saturday morning.
Yeah.
For the most part – what we're waiting on now is just injury announcements. People that are questionable, trying to see if they're going to play.
Yeah.
So for the most part, a lot of the big pickups for the week are gone. But that said, a guy who I think has flown under the radar, and a guy I think a lot of people haven't heard of, and a guy who I picked up on my team, and a guy we're going to see tomorrow because he plays against the Patriots, is Elijah McGuire, the running back for the Jets, who I think a lot of people don't know, and he's probably still around in most of your leagues, whether you're talking about ESPN, Yahoo. Bilal Powell's not going to play against the Pats. Mm-hmm. For a Jets team that needs to hold onto the ball and maybe try to establish time of possession and keep Tom Brady off the field, I could see Elijah McGuire being a big-time contributor here in tomorrow. And now, ultimately, it's going to come down to can he get in the end zone or not. But do you think, what have you seen out of Elijah McGuire? Does he warrant my pickup and others who maybe now rush to the computer to get it?
Yeah, so he should be okay, right? There should be volume there, right? So when we look at, especially in fantasy football, and this is true to an extent in real football, but in fantasy football, you're looking for two things. You're looking for elite talent, or you're looking for massive amounts of opportunity. He should have all kinds of opportunity tomorrow. McCown has been okay. Like, he's been able to get the ball to Curley. He's been able to get the ball out to Bilal Powell at times. They're not great at running the ball. But if you're playing in a PPR league, he should see plenty of volume, and he has a bit of upside against the Patriots team that has struggled to stop pass-catching running backs. He should be all right.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you before we get into more specifics is,
and
I have agreed with him. Richard Sherman said 2 weeks ago that basically he doesn't care about the fantasy teams.
Nor should he.
And that players are souring on fantasy football because they get so much grief from fans about, oh, you're injured, it hurts my fantasy team. Oh, you didn't score, that hurts my fantasy team. So Richard Sherman says Chris Carson, Seahawks running back, breaks his leg, and everyone's like, oh, my God, my fantasy team.
Right.
And he went off on that. Odell Beckham Jr., same thing. How do you view his comments about fantasy football.
No, he's completely right. He shouldn't care one iota about anybody's fantasy team. It should be the last thing on any professional athlete's mind. I know some of them play, which makes it weird.
Yeah.
I know some of them play themselves. We've heard stories of guys starting themselves and using that as motivation to have a big game. I would like to imagine that nobody has ever... You know, we saw years ago the running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, his name's going to escape, MJD.
Maurice Jones-Drew.
Took a knee on the one-yard line.
Yeah.
He supposedly had started himself that week and considered running that ball in despite it not helping the team because he wanted the touchdown. I don't know if that's true, but you'd like to think that guys are not purposefully taking knees when they could be scoring points. All of that simply to say they should not care about our teams. I hate that anyone would ever be dumb enough to tweet somebody who's been injured, to tweet somebody who has real-life impact of these injuries, to complain to them about their fantasy team is absurd.
I totally agree with you there, but I did hear an interesting take. And Will Cain's the guy we got to know. And Will Cain co-hosts a show with Priscilla when he was up here a week ago yesterday doing the show. And I did think he made a very interesting point, though, that businesses do not grow and prosper when they start to alienate their consumers.
That's correct.
So here you have players getting on fans, which can rub fans the wrong way.
Sure.
You have players with the political stuff rubbing fans the wrong way, potentially. You have the commissioner rubbing players the wrong, rubbing fans the wrong way in his treatment of players or treatment of the political issues. No matter which side you lean on, right or left, you're going to be offended. Either you're offended by the players who kneel, or you're offended by Jerry Jones who says don't kneel, or you're offended by Roger Goodell who's kind of neutral in the middle of it all and plays both sides. So if the players are going to get on the fans about fantasy and the league is going to alienate certain fans because of political stuff, maybe that's not the best thing for Richard Sherman and others to be saying, because it feels like the fans are being alienated from the product. Do you feel that also? I thought that was a smart take of what I had thought of.
It is a smart take, and I do think that's happening in all of the examples you gave. I think the difference is I don't want Sherman to care. I want the Seahawks to care, right?
Right.
So I want the teams to be embracing fantasy in an all-new way. We've heard them talk about the possibilities of providing fantasy updates in live stadium situations, right? Because they think that one of the reasons guys aren't going to games anymore is they want to track their fantasy teams. They want to see, they want to watch Red Zone, right? So we're talking about at-seat TVs for Red Zone, and we're talking about live scoring of ESPN or whoever, whatever league they partner with, and displaying that scoring in the stadium so you can watch watch players accumulate points as you go. I think that's very smart. I went to an event probably 3 years ago now at Gillette Stadium to be part of a CBS fantasy event where we were at the stadium, we answered questions. Jamie was there from CBS Sports. We did this thing, and it was like kind of cool, but it was very, you could tell that the Patriots weren't all that behind it. It was at Patriots Place, but you barely saw any personnel. I think there was like two cheerleaders. You know, they were the mascot might have been around for 5 minutes, but largely they didn't care. Since then, every year they've had now a Matthew Berry, industry great, every year host this big fantasy event. They rent out the luxury boxes for you to do your live draft. You get on the field with the teams. You get to run routes from the coaching staff, and you do your draft there, and they answer questions. Teams are starting to embrace that. I think that's very smart because it is driving business in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so we'll get back to the players here. The situation that I think is a toxic situation but also is a potential for a lot of opportunity for fantasy owners is the New York Giants wide receiver group.
Yeah.
So Odell Beckham Jr. is out for the year. Mm-hmm. Sterling Shepard's not going to play this week against Denver, and Brandon Marshall's out for the year. So on one hand, I say, look, I'm going to stay away from the Giants because I just don't know if they're going to be able to move the ball. But you're looking at potentially three new receivers this week and a tight end in Evan Ingram that I have to imagine become must-starts in a lot of ways. Evan Ingram at tight end, Tarvaris King at wide receiver, and Roger Lewis. Are these guys all of a sudden must-pickups and must-starts?
Yeah, so really – really,
you're talking about the opportunity.
Situation.
They're going to have opportunity.
They're going to have opportunity. Ingram's the one guy I'm excited about. So at tight end, which tight end is such a volatile position already week to week, that tight end is a spot I'm excited about. I like Roger Lewis and his potential. I don't want him this week. They're in Denver, right?
And then they're in Seattle next week.
And then they're in Seattle, who's been a little more soft against the pass than Denver, certainly. I'm a little more open to them next week. They're in such a bad spot this week that it really kills sort of the excitement around the opportunity, right? They've been so bad offensively already. And then they're in the worst possible situation. It makes it a tough pill to swallow. That being said, I will happily start Ingram if I have him. There's no way that in a season-long league, if you play DraftKings or FanDuel, something like that, Roger Lewis is a guy you can look at. He's dirt cheap. He's practically free. He's going to see some opportunity. It's a horrible matchup, but
the possibility
garbage time touchdown.
Range of outcomes, right? Yeah, we talk about range of outcomes. Within his range of outcomes, as he catches four passes and he scores a touchdown, I like him. In a season-long league, I can't imagine you're starting them this week, probably not even next week. If things stay bad, Roger Lewis long-term, I think, could do some things.
So you also go and look at defenses. And I've been a guy who's been a proponent in drafting my leagues of, I want to draft a good defense. Mm-hmm. I want to draft a good defense and have them season-long. I want Seattle. I wanted San Francisco back in the day. This year I drafted Houston, and I felt really good about it. Do you like the season-long defense, or do you like the streaming defense week to week?
Yeah, I stream defenses week to week. So I do three. I do things in a way that's probably a little unconventional. Most people do what you just described, and they draft defenses. They like to draft top defenses, and they like to do so way earlier than I ever would in a draft, so they can make sure they get those defenses. The problem with that is year to year, there's not a lot of correlation in fantasy points allowed last year to this year, right? So we don't see that there's a real direct positive correlation year to year. Defenses take a step back a lot of times. We see that.
Yeah.
Other defenses take a step forward.
A lot of that could be just because of the schedule you're playing.
A lot of it could just be schedule, which is why streaming becomes such a possibility. Someone's always playing the Jets, right? Someone's always playing the Browns. Someone's always playing Jacksonville historically. So it's been determined that because defenses are already volatile and it's hard to predict their outcomes as is, you're better off doing it week to week. I can look at this week and this week only and decide who has a good opportunity to get after the quarterback or whatever my scoring in my league might determine who's going to get the most points. That's what I do. So I stream defense, I stream tight end, and I stream quarterback. I don't draft either, not one of them. I don't draft any of those three positions until the last three rounds of my league. I draft voluminous wide receivers and running backs. Pretty much breaks down to a very simple economic concept, supply and demand.
Yeah.
I have to start three or five running backs and wide receivers. I only need one of the others.
Yeah. So, kicker, though, is that one you don't do?
I stream kicker, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I forgot.
So, stream kicker also. Now I have Houston's defense. They just lost J.J. Watt and Whitney Merciless for the year.
Yeah.
Now, they're playing Cleveland this week, so I keep them.
You're good. Yeah.
But after that, should I be done with them?
Maybe.
Because they're not going to have the thing that made them elite, which was pass rushing. So, sack, force fumbles, pressure that causes interceptions for touchdowns, those things might not happen.
Yeah, I am very likely playing them this week, and then I am playing matchups from here on out.
Yeah. Moving forward, who are some other potential big adds this week? I know Kenny Britt's down for the Browns, so even though we talk about the Browns struggling, they've got a new quarterback in this week,
Hogan.
Kevin Hogan.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll be a little more crisp in the pass game than they've been with DeShone Kizer.
Let's hope so.
But Kenny Britt's down. What about some of his replacements in Cleveland?
Yeah, Ricardo Lewis is the guy everybody's talking about. I like Lewis to an extent. I mean, your upside's always going to be limited. We don't know exactly what we're going to see from Hogan. He's looked okay. He certainly, as a quarterback, is even an option for somebody who's totally desperate because he does have what we call a safe floor because of his rushing ability. He's going to pick up 4 or 5 points. Maybe he gets lucky and gets a touchdown. That establishes a really nice floor at quarterback. We don't really know what it's going to do for his receivers. Ricardo Lewis is the guy you could consider, but there are better options out there. You know, one of the guys I like a lot this week, Juju Smith-Schuster from USC, the best name in football.
Yeah.
He's running the second most routes of anybody on that team right now. Anybody not named Antonio Brown, he's on the field more than everyone else, which is incredible. He's not a guy that anyone's plugging into their lineups, but he's running like 80. He's on the field for like 82% of the snaps. He's in an offense where Big Ben has struggled a little bit, but if you're Big Ben's number two, and the only other option is Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, the opportunity is going to be there. I'd rather add a guy like Juju, if not just for his name, than I would Ricardo Lewis.
What about guys who have surprised you? I mean, Cooper Kupp in Los Angeles has been a guy who's been surprising. What about biggest fantasy surprises positively?
Yeah, so, I mean, the obvious answer we talk about every week is Kareem Hunt, right?
Yeah.
So when I was on Fantasy Football, National Fantasy Football Day, Bernie asked me, who's the one guy you can't leave your draft without if you want to win a championship? And I told him it was an unfair question, but the answer I gave was Kareem Hunt.
A little tap on the shoulder right there.
A little tap on the shoulder, a little humble brag. So, and it wasn't that it's not that I was foreseeing him being the number one scoring at any position in the league, you know, the number one scoring running back and basically the best guy you could have possibly drafted. It's just that we understand who Andy Reid is. We understand the Andy Reid system, and we knew that there was no one else, right? So if you're almost guaranteed to be the guy and you're in a system like the Andy Reid running back system, you know you're going to be productive. So Kareem Hunt's been that guy.
And then there's been all kinds of young quarterback talent that's really taken a big step forward this year. Deshaun Watson, obviously, yeah. A huge surprise. I think we thought he would be okay. I don't think anyone in their right mind thought that he would be what he has been. And we're seeing that from several young quarterbacks. Even Jacoby Brissett with the Colts has been very good from a fantasy perspective. Jared Goff been very good out in L.A. So there's been a lot of quarterbacks who have really been that surprise. And I think we'll see moving forward, some of the wide receivers take a step forward here, but right now it's been quarterbacks.
Real quick, we'll get you out of here on this 30 seconds or less before we go to our last commercial break here. Bye weeks this week. A lot of guys out, four teams on the bye again. Who are you looking for to kind of fill the hole at running back? I got Jamaal Charles in one of my leagues as a possible bye week fill-in.
Yeah, running back's really tough. I mean, if you absolutely have to start somebody, Samaje Perine in Washington is going to get the go. He's a guy that you could really probably point to. In terms of receivers, Taylor Gabriel is the number two in Atlanta. So there's some number two guys out there because of injury who are around. Juju Smith-Schuster we talked about. Taylor Gabriel is a guy that you could go get. Running back's going to be a little tougher.
Yeah. All right, that was Jake Kent. He's been here all day, but that was our fantasy sports segment we do weekly here on Sports Saturday. We're live at the Heroes Day at Essex Cinemas. We'll be right back, our final segment. Trust me, you'll want to stick around for this one.
Jeff Paul.
Your team sucks.
You want to try that again?
No, maybe got to,
maybe later.
Yeah, I'll try that again later. That was very Dave Hunter of me.
Bernie Siplicki. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN.
That annoying music means it's almost
song.
Time for us to leave. That annoying music means it's almost time for us to leave. Sports Saturday live at Heroes Day in Essex at the Essex Cinemas. Come hang out. Look, it has been a great day. It's been a steady stream of people all day long. A chance for everyone to come check out the Chopper, a chance to come check out the Humvees, a chance to say thank you to our servicemen and women of the Vermont National Guard. It's been a great day. Jake Kent, Brady Farkas here as well. Dave Hunter back in the studio inside our 40th and Allen Studios in Colchester. We appreciate you as well. Dave, I'm going to put you to work here. 60 seconds left of the show. Here's what we're doing. The ultimate Boston sports fan, November 24th through 26th, we are giving you chances to see tickets to all of your favorite New England teams. So the 24th, you're going to see Celtics and Bruins. The 26th, you're going to see the Patriots. You're going to have hotels for that weekend. You're going to have some spending money on us thanks to our friends at Mortgage Financial. Get in now, 802-655-6672. I need caller number 7 to qualify. Next week is your last week to qualify. We've been doing it for 3 weeks. One more week to go. Get in now, 802-655-6672.